You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, what's up? I'm Captain Dean, and welcome back to another episode being recorded on location at Mellow Matt's Music and More, where the staff is cool and the stuff is cooler. Or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know. You come here and tell me what you think about it. But I'm here today with the bassist of the Young Romantics, Garrick Patrick.
Yo, what's up?
Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Dude, I'm excited to be here, honestly.
I'm glad you're here because we talked recently and was like, well, let's do this.
Yeah, let's do
it. So yours didn't take 2 months to nail down.
No.
We actually did it in a week.
Yeah.
So good for you. Some guys are hard to nail down and get with, you know, because they're so busy and stuff. But Garrick, you are from nearby Somerset, Kentucky. Is that right?
Somerset, more specifically Science Hill, Kentucky.
Science Hill, is that where you were born and raised?
I was born in Somerset, kind of moved around in the area, but yeah, that's where I was born and raised, in Somerset.
So. And what got you into music and led to the path of getting you to Bowling Green?
Dude, there's so much that got me
into
music.
Tell us about it.
All right, so I actually got into music really randomly. One day, it was during one of these long-ass, like, storm fronts when they moved through, like, in Kentucky, and it was just super stormy for, like, probably 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I was just bored out of my mind.
We kind
of
just went through that recently.
Yeah. It's like I was just bored out of my mind in the summer when I was a kid. I think I was like 11 years old. And I was just sitting around my house playing Scrabble with my sister. I'm like, dude, I don't mean to be mean to you, but I am bored out of my mind. And I remember that my dad had like this old, it was an old black K guitar. It was like a Strat knockoff with a maple fretboard. And I was like, I'm gonna learn how to play this.
Did he play, or was it just kind of?
My dad used to shred.
Yeah,
yeah, he used to shred.
Because I hear the story a lot. Like my dad had a guitar, but he didn't play.
Well, my dad.
So some had them and didn't play. Some had them and did play, but put them down. And,
well, it was so funny because when I was a kid, I remember us going to people's houses and like I think he had a band back in the day. I mean, his side of the family's rich with music history.
So it's in your blood.
Yeah, my cousin is Charlie Sizemore, the bluegrass musician.
Yeah.
He played with Ralph Stanley
for
like 20, 30-something years.
That's cool.
And he had to stop because of health reasons. So, yeah, but it's definitely music. So, like, yeah, he used to play, and it was like I got bored that one day. I got to learn how to play this. My dad's like, okay. And he, like, picks it up and shreds like Angus Young licks from like solos, and I'm like, what the hell is this? So yeah, I sat around, did that, and I fiddled around with the guitar without formal lessons for about 2 years.
Okay.
And eventually it just got to the point I was like, well, I know all the little like licks, I could do all the little runs, but as far as like I was picking up that there was like a timing issue and different things that I find a lot of young guitarists don't lean into. Like, you got to figure out how to do that. So I started taking guitar lessons. But about that time, my dad's like, hey, you know, you're starting these lessons. I go, yeah. He's like, let's try something else. He goes, so do you want to make money off of it? I go, yeah. He goes, learn how to play a bass. Because everybody always needs a
always
bass player.
Needs a bass
player.
They
always need a bass player. So I went to like one guitar lesson, and my birthday was around that time. I go, actually, could I get a Squire Affinity J bass for my birthday this year? It was like my 12th or 13th birthday.
Nice.
So I took that and took that into the thing, and my guitar teacher's like, I guess we're doing this now. And I learned how to run down Working for the MCA by Skynyrd. That was one of the first songs I learned, man. I'm a Southern rock kid.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you know, like, that's what we
listen
to.
Wrong with some Skynyrd?
No, dude. I'm actually more of a Molly Hatchet guy, but that was the first one I learned how to play. So.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And the fact that you were so young and already had a strong passion, like leaning to it.
Yeah.
Like you just looked at it with tunnel vision.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to do that.
Yeah, no, it's really just kind of become like my girlfriend, like, she's visiting this weekend and she's still at the house and I'm here. So it's like my music
well, hurry
thing,
up.
Yeah, it's like my music thing is kind of an obsession sometimes.
Well, you know, it's a timing thing and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, lady. Yeah. He'll be back as soon as he's done.
Yeah, I'll be back. Love you, Katie.
But you got into it really young. Mm-hmm. Obviously, playing Scrabble didn't make you just go, you know what? I want to be a, I want to play music.
No.
Yeah. What made? What were you listening to growing up? What was obviously your dad played. So, what inspiration came from possibly your dad's music or maybe the music in the house?
Oh man.
Anything stand out that really it for you?
The one thing, like, there were two bands that really made me like, or not bands, I guess musicians with their bands, that made me really kind of just lean into it a lot was, he used to play a lot of Steve Earle and the Dukes, you know, man, that was kind of where a lot of my background was listening to that. And then,
not bad.
I loved Ted Nugent's guitar playing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Musically, I love Ted Nugent, but personally, I hated it.
Oh, yeah. He's not a great dude, but it's like I just remember listening to his music. I'm like, dude, this guy can freaking shred.
Because, see, you know? I grew up in the 80s, and I remember a lot of the 80s Ted Nugent.
Mm-hmm.
But then my brother discovered like the Amboy Dukes.
Yeah.
And I listened to that. And I was like, it's night and day difference. But, and of course, the Damn Yankees were a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid. So, but that name was pretty around. But yeah, I mean, I completely understand why musically you would find that intriguing.
Yeah. And I just like that because Steve Earle's always had this like harder, like rougher side to him. And then, about the time I started playing, because that was pre-playing, that really like
just listening to
it a lot. And then when I started playing, that was about the time. I guess that would have been about the time that like American Idiot and everything by Green Day and stuff was coming out.
94.
No, that was like in the early 2000s.
I was thinking Dookie. Yeah, was 2000, 2001.
Yeah, 2000. It was right after that. And like, I liked American Idiot a lot because my dad was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So like right after 9/11, you know, he's like getting ready to get deployed. So I was like, I was that pissed off like punk kid, like listening to American
Idiot.
That
album did have a big impact on a lot of people.
Dude, yeah. And I still cite that. Like that, a lot of times people see me play, they're like, dude, you look mad. I'm like, dude, it's because I grew up like playing like that. You know? So
I totally understand that.
Yeah. And then the older I got, you know, with that you start researching backwards. So you listen to Green Day and things like that, and it's like start going back, and now like I have been stuck on Combat Rock by The Clash for the last year and a half. Like I have it in my, I was listening to it in my car on the way over here.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about music, especially music of that nature, is it does kind of say, we're glad you like this. We're glad you're into our band, but please check out what influenced us.
Yeah,
like Green Day is really good about, you know, we are who we are, and we know that we're not everybody's thing, but don't forget, you know, what inspired us and kind of what we came from.
Oh, yeah.
And that worked on a lot of people, and you're proof of that.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I mean, the older I got, the more technical I got in my playing.
Yeah.
But, dude, that's still, like, three chords and just lyrics is really what
it's powerful.
That's what drives my playing. Like still to this day,
I'm it's
like,
powerful. Yeah. And you know, you can argue that with other musicians that are fancy players and all that stuff. But to me, three chords and the truth works for country music and it works for punk rock.
Yeah, it does.
Good old rock and roll music doesn't require you know, this over the top Dream Theater and Rush style stuff,
right,
which, you know, it's great.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's just like, not, you know, I'm with you. It's never been my thing.
It's not everybody needs to be a John Petrucci, you know, like not everybody needs that. So
it's cool though
when you see somebody who can freaking shred, you're like, oh, dude, that's
cool. It's amazing to watch. You know, I saw a band recently at Tidballs that was just this over the top like hair metal band, and you know, they're very technical guitar players. They're very almost like classical guitar players, but it's also just, it's like too much to take in, I think, when you're just a simple rock and roll punk rock guy.
It's hard to relate to when you don't play music,
right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of times musicians get caught up and they're like, well, I can do it, so everybody else understands.
So it's that, it's the differences of musicality, I guess, is what you put it into. But I relate to you on that.
Yeah, cool, man.
I really fell in more with the Green Day and Clash than others. Especially now.
Yeah, definitely now.
But you talk about, you decided to, you were taking lessons and you were piddling around with guitar, but you made the decision through a conversation with your dad to pick up bass.
Yeah.
And you really like discovered it as something relatable and like you wanted to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I cite him for leading me in the right direction. Okay. But over time with bass, I think for me that really stands out. And I think a lot of times, like, I don't want to be up on myself, but like through my playing, you can tell that I've learned it more as a melodic instrument than like just a simple rhythm instrument.
Right.
Like, because I think that it's more important to use it as an asset in a band rather than a lot of times just something that you have to have.
Right. Holding down the low end and all that stuff.
And a lot of times, like when people get started, they end up who ends up being the bassist in a band? Well, it's like you start a band with three guitar players and the guy who's the worst guitar player, you throw on a bass guitar and you're like, oh, well, this guy can do it. So yeah, you do it. And then there's fallout there. But no, like I really enjoy it, and I thought it was really cool because I've always been someone who wants to be a little bit different.
Yep.
So it's like everybody can play guitar. It's like, well, if I can figure out how to do a lot of stuff on guitar or on the bass,
right?
You know, like if I could do chords or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I found like Primus about like ninth grade, and I was like, yo, dude, this guy is crazy.
And what year was that?
Ninth grade, so that would have been like 2009,
2010. That's
so
crazy.
Yeah, it's like I found Primus so late, like... And everybody else is like, you didn't know about that weird guy? Yeah. Like, I'm like...
It is very... Even to this day, Primus seems to still be an underground thing.
Yeah, and I think what it was... Man, I hate being just that guy. But I think like what got me into Primus was I was playing like Guitar Hero at a friend's house. And I heard like a song or something that was on there. I go, that's not a guitar, dude. And they're like, yeah, it is. It's playing on guitar. I go, no, that's not a guitar. That's a bass, you know? So that was... That was one of those fun things about that. I was like, dude, that's so cool.
It is cool. Yeah. I'll never forget when I first heard Primus. It was like life-changing stuff.
Especially
Seas of Cheese came out in 91.
Yeah.
All this great stuff was coming out around that time.
Yeah.
But for some reason, Primus was kind of mixed in with the hair metal.
Yeah.
And I caught wind of them, but I didn't like get it because to me, things were still, you know, hair metal or this new music that was coming out.
Yeah.
When I heard Primus, it was like, what is this? That's weird. But that I remember, like, I heard Seas of Cheese because Jerry Was a Race Car Driver was a big hit in a way. And then Tommy the Cat was a thing. And I remember we caught these videos because MTV had 120 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And so I caught a lot of that stuff off of the alternative movement was coming along. And
yeah, yeah.
So thank God for that. But it was a weird time. But, yeah, that band really stood out. And anybody that played bass immediately was like, what is this guy doing, you know? Because Flea was his own thing.
Yeah.
But Les Claypool was on another planet.
He was just a totally different dude.
So even though I caught wind of it in the time, you caught wind of it years after, but it's still that same thing that proves that Primus is such underground.
Yeah, dude.
And almost like a secret thing where you just pass the tapes to people and go, you gotta check this out.
It, like, if you go to a show of theirs or something, like, you hear people chanting Primus sucks, and it's like, that's the thing. It's
I've been to a lot of Primus concerts, and we do it, and all these people around us are like, man, there ain't nothing wrong with Primus. What's wrong with you? Like, you don't get it. You don't belong to be here. You should leave, sir.
That's so funny.
I've seen Primus like 5 times.
Dude, I wanted to go. They had a show on my birthday last year, and I didn't get a chance.
That sucks.
Yeah. I was super stoked.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
But I saw them back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day.
Back in the, like...
I saw them on Pork Soda.
Oh, my God.
The first time I saw them live. And then I saw them literally on every tour after that.
Wow.
The 5 tours that followed. Like, I saw them on the... What was the Penguin album?
Oh,
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, the one after Pork Soda. And then I saw them with Brain.
Oh,
the
really?
Brown album. Yeah. Like, I've seen Primus on all these tours and stuff.
That's freaking
great.
Nice.
Band.
Yeah,
you need to go see them.
Yeah, play. I will, don't worry.
But anyway, you pick up bass, you immediately felt comfortable with it and stuck with it.
Yeah.
What did you do once you got into that world, and did you like dive into a band or any just kind of piddling around jamming with people? Yeah. What was your first experience as a bass player?
Okay, so there were a few different things that happened. So, like, I played, like a lot of younger guys, especially in the South or Southern Kentucky, you start in a church.
Yeah.
You start playing in a church because that's the only way where you can start as, like, a 13-year-old to play with people and figure out how to work dynamically and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's one of those things where it's, like, I started in a church, and then it was really fun, because then that's where you figure out, okay, these stops and starts, and this is how you do it together. And it's like, okay, well, what's a metronome? And then you're figuring out, like, what a metronome is, how to play with a click.
And because, how to play with a band.
Yeah, it's like how to play with a click, how to play with a band, how to feed off of each other, especially if you play in, like, something, because I was playing for a Baptist church a long time, and I'm not Baptist, but, like, I was playing with them, and the thing about it is, you had sometimes where it was almost like, it was like, I've played in a couple jam bands before, so it was, that's the only thing I can relate it to, because you have these things where you got to keep playing longer, like while the service is going on and everything else, and then you learn all these dynamic cues. And then also in high school, around the same time, I started a band with a couple of my friends, and I actually was playing guitar in this band at the time, because I never really gave up on guitar. It was just one of those things that I practiced.
Whatever was needed, you could do.
Yeah, so one of my buddies, he picked up bass, and he started playing bass for that. And I started playing guitar for that group. And I have one of my friends, he's still a killer drummer, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still back in Somerset. He plays with a church there, but he was a killer drummer back in the day. So we played and, like, got down a couple covers, and since we realized we were like 14, 15 and had no way of transportation or getting anywhere, like, we couldn't really go play shows.
So, that's the beautiful part of that.
It's like we were really young and we're like, oh, dude, we got these kind of down. So we, like, posted a couple MySpace videos where I was playing, like, a Velvet Revolver cover or something, and there was a solo that I couldn't quite nail because I was standing up and I had this big, like, Epiphone 335 type thing. So I had to sit down in the video, and it's just this painfully awkward, like, two kids with really long hair, and I've always had this crew cut type thing, and me sitting down with shorts on, it looks like I have, like, lady legs sticking out, man. But it was great. It was fun. Like, and then the band broke up, and everybody didn't talk to each other for a week and a half.
How about that?
Yeah, right. It was fun though, looking back on that.
But at least it got you on the path.
Yeah, no, it really showed me, like, I think those things, more than anything, showed me how to deal with other people musically.
True.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that's really hard, and I still struggle with that sometimes. It's like, it's like when you're like playing music with people, there's a lot of times it's like, okay, well, we're not going to agree on this 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find a band where you agree on everything 100% of the time, dude, stay with that band until somebody dies.
I personally don't think that exists, but maybe it does. I don't know. So that didn't last for too long.
No,
it got you going.
Yeah.
What was after that?
After that, I took a big hiatus from music in public. So that was probably from the time I started high school, the time I graduated high school and I went to college. And I took probably a 2 complete year break from it.
Wow.
Yeah, because I started college over at I started at UK, and I was doing Air Force ROTC there, and I was studying biology, and there was all this stuff that just, like, wasn't really, like, you can't really play music doing all these things because I was just so busy.
Exactly.
And then eventually, like, I just kind of got, I don't know what happened, but I had, like, a change of mind on my career choice, so I transferred from UK to Eastern Kentucky University. EKU, the big EKU that everybody talks about.
The Colonels, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the Colonel. I think they tried to change it to, like, Go Big E now. It's like the Big E. I thought that just sounded like ecstasy.
Being a lifelong Bowling Green resident, the difference between Eastern and Western is kind of strange to me. I'm just so used to WKU.
Oh yeah, it's different. Like it's a way different thing. But I get there and I go through a semester, and then someone figured out, which was Sean Sullivan, he's with Mojo Thunder now.
Yeah.
He figured out that I could play guitar and bass.
That's and cool.
I went over to his house one day. We were just chilling, and he brought out this guitar, and I was like, dude, this guy's got some sick gear. Like, he had, I think it was like a Fender DeVille or something at the mm-hmm. time, and then like some other cool guitar. And I was like, dude, like, can I play on that? He's like, yeah. And I started playing. He goes, dude, you're pretty good. And I'm like, yeah. And so before long, I get this. I remember I was laying in bed one night, and he like texts me. He goes, dude, I'm going to start a band. Do you want to like try to be in a band with me for a bit? And I was like, yeah. So we started playing that.
Now, is this at
Eastern? This is at Eastern, yeah.
Okay. And then where is that exactly?
It's in Richmond, Kentucky.
It is in Richmond.
It's in Richmond, okay. Kentucky. So we
thought so, but I wanted to make sure.
We started this band playing. He has a few originals that he was doing, and then there were a couple things that we co-wrote, and then there were a lot of different types of cover things, because the problem with Richmond bars is when you go there, they don't book for shows. They book for the evening's entertainment.
Of course.
So whenever you get there, it's not playing, you know, like you're set and you're done. It's playing a 4-hour gig.
Basically a jukebox
yeah.
kind of situation.
Yeah, and cover it, band and it seems like that, but we really did try to make it to where it wasn't going to be,
yeah.
you know, just like a cover band, because I'm not a big cover band guy.
Right.
It's not that I don't appreciate it when I see somebody that can absolutely right. kill a guitar solo exactly like I saw a cover band not too long ago where a dude was like, he did Sultans of Swing and just nailed it. You know, like if you can nail that song, like right. that guitar solo, that's awesome. But
yeah.
That's not me.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but that's not me. And so we did that, and we played like a few Dead covers, but we like did our own renditions of them.
Of course.
And the awesome thing about Dead covers is they take yeah. up 30 minutes of your time. So we'd play two Dead covers, and that's a quarter of the show gone, you yep. know, and then you go get another beer or two, and then you go back.
And you can just have fun with the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I stayed with that band. That was originally Sully and the Auditoriums.
Interesting.
Was, yeah, what it was ODD. ITU, however you spell it. But yeah.
Right.
And then we had our... He had played with this guy known as Bonner Chafin before, and he is a remarkable blues guitarist.
Right.
And he plays sometimes with Scotty Bratcher from who I think he's been with, like, Scotty's popped in and out of a lot of different groups before. I've met him whenever I was in studio before. I know that I think he's popped in with like Kentucky Headhunters before, and he's popped in with Blackberry Smoke like maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a killer blues musician.
Awesome.
So we started a band called Rose Tint Collective, and that was Roco for short. And we played pretty consistent gigs with pretty good numbers for probably like, I'd say a year, year and a half. It was really good. And then, I don't know, I guess it was like a creative difference between two of the members or something. I don't exactly know. Like I was
usually
a bass.
Something.
Yeah, it's like I'm the bass player. I was just minding my own business. And when they're like, hey, we need you to write a part to this song that we came up with, I'm like, okay. So, yeah. You know, so that's what I did. And then, but yeah, I remember there were like a gig or two that got canceled. And then out of nowhere, it's like, yeah, we're not together anymore. So then
wow.
I went through another like year-long hiatus.
Damn.
Yeah, dude, like it sucks. And I was super bummed. I played a couple gigs just with random bands. And throughout this time, I mean, I've done a few different sessions and things with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've done that, and that's always fun. I like sessions, but the only thing about sessions is you have a tendency to get kind of told what to do all the time.
Yeah,
but that's the
world of its own.
Yeah, and but that's the reason you're a session guy,
right?
Because somebody needs you to play the part like they
right.
want.
It's being cast.
Yeah,
into a role. And
it is.
They expect you to do what they ask you to do.
Yeah, and that's fine. And I liked some of it. I mean, those things paid pretty well.
Yeah.
I don't really remember many of the names because it was usually just somebody. They're like, hey, can you come in the studio? We'll pay you like $150. Like, lay down a few tracks. Yeah, sure. I don't
care.
It's
kind of two different worlds
yeah.
when you look on it. Like, the music live thing and the music studio thing is, you know.
Yeah.
They do cross paths, obviously, but they are kind of two different things if you get into one or the other.
It's like it's like the difference between making a band work and then making a band work in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's kind of the difference. It's like, you just, I like it better when I don't have people consistently like, okay, well, can you turn your tone knob down on the bass? I'm like, why would I do that?
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like a guitar now. And they're like, no, make it sound like the bass. I'm like, well, get a synth to do it, you know.
Yeah,
like,
really. How about you come in and do
it? Yeah, you come in and do it. So, yeah. But I did that for a while, and I during the downtime after college, I went back to Somerset because I got my I got my bachelor's in Homeland Security, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. So
dang.
I did that, and like I did a couple internships as a narc for a little bit, and I realized like I don't work as a narc. Like, being a narc and a musician at the same time,
yeah,
don't really,
that would
like,
be hard to get gigs.
So it's
don't
like,
book him.
Yeah, you know. So it's like I kind of was like, yeah, well. So I made the decision at that point in time I was going to go to Naval Officer School.
Interesting.
So yeah, I applied for that. And waited around forever, wrote my own music for a little bit. Didn't really record any of it because, I mean, I was a student with a bachelor's degree that couldn't get a job anywhere.
Right.
So I was in my parents' basement just depressed, like drinking beer on the weekends. Like,
did you narc on yourself?
No, I did. I did not, actually. I've been asked that before, but no, I didn't. And it was just like, yeah, I was like super depressed at this point in time. I was like, I'd waited around for a year because, I mean, that's like a federal application and stuff. And then eventually I get a call back and they're like, hey, we actually don't have any slots for you at this point in time. So I spent that entire... I worked as a janitor with 2 degrees, dude.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But I've heard that from so many people.
Yeah, man. Like,
I've met people that graduate with bachelor degrees that get a job at a convenience store.
Yeah, man.
You know, because they can't find anything.
Yeah, and the thing is like, I even had, like, I have an associate's in chemistry too, so it's like I had all this.
Wild.
I had everything to get a job. I just could not land one for my life. And it was,
how about that?
And it was like I did that, and I had gotten in super good shape because I was planning on going to training, and I got shot down for that position, and they're like, well, there might be one in the future, so we'll keep it on file. And I was like, okay. And I was like, whatever. I was just super mad. And I was like, well, now I literally have nowhere to go. So, and I was like, me and my dad, like, if you graduate college and you're at your parents' house for a long time, it's like you start to just butt heads, you know? And it wasn't anything like bad. And like, but I remember one day he's like, dude, you need to get up and like leave or something. I was getting ready to enlist in the Navy to like work on bombs or something.
Wow.
And my mom goes, hey, how about you don't do that? And since you're like on top of your game with school, like you should go to graduate school. So voila, I am a Western Kentucky University grad student for a year and a half.
So that would be the answer to the question of what brought you to Bowling.
Exactly. I tried to tie all that in together. So yeah. And my roommates,
damn good job.
My roommates, they still joke with me because they know like my background and my undergrad, because I'm an environmental guy now.
That's crazy.
I'm an environmental guy. I have an internship working with the Park Service this summer. So it's like, I'm an environmental guy now, but everybody in my house still makes fun of me. They're like, you're in the FBI, aren't you? They're like, you didn't not get hired. They're like, you've been hired this whole time. Yep. They're like, you're in the FBI. Because it was really funny. I just randomly emailed the guys that I live with now. They're like some of my best friends I've ever had now. But I randomly emailed them and was like, hey, I have a friend of a friend who lives in your house that's getting ready to leave. Is that room going to be available? And he's like, can you pay rent? And I go, I have like $300 right now because I've been working as a janitor with degrees and stuff. But I'll find a job and I'll pay you. And he's like, okay. So I did that. So yeah, now it's just like the running joke. Like,
worked out.
Yeah. But yeah. And
but that's what got you here.
Yeah, that's how I'm here. And
that's interesting.
I love it here. Bowling
so
Green.
So coming out of, I guess that you said during that time you weren't doing much musically.
No.
You were just kind of writing your own songs but not really doing anything
yeah.
with them. When you got to Bowling Green, did you discover the music scene kind of pretty quick and get involved in it, or?
Oh man, this is I'm gonna embarrass myself real quick.
That's what these are all about.
You know how I figured out how Bowling Green was like really cool? Okay, first impressions of Bowling Green that I was afraid of whenever I was moving here.
I can't wait to hear this.
I was like, okay, there are two things that everybody doesn't shut up, because whenever I moved here, like, I'm pretty sure it was like Brandon Dowdy, the quarterback or whatever, that was like doing killer. Oh, yeah. Like, people wouldn't quit talking about football.
Yeah.
And I assumed that everybody just talked about Cage the Elephant all the time. And I was like, that's not a bad thing. I love Cage. I've seen him 3 times at that point. But it's like, I was like, okay, is that all I'm going to get? And I'm like, going around one night, it was one of the first nights I'm here, I was really, really drunk. Like, just really drunk, walking around. And I heard live music coming from a bar, and I was like, I had like this epiphany. I'm like, dude, I've not played or seen live music in so long, because I've been in a basement playing Dark Souls 3 for the last year and a half. So it's like, I walk in, and it was a Tid Balls, and the guy's like, $5, and I get in, and there is this magnificent reggae band in there. And
Roots of Rebellion.
I think so, yeah. And I was in there just plastered, and I'm like, dude,
magnificent reggae band I can think of.
Dude, and I was like, man, these guys freaking kill it. Yeah. And I was like, that got me into it. So I went home and I started writing again. And that was like one of those things where, you know, if you get away from music a couple times and you come back to it, then you're like, this is something I meant to do.
Right. It's a shit or get off the pot.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially the older you get.
Yeah, man. And it's like, I'm 24 now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You're so old.
Yeah, I know. But it's like, I'm 24 now, and it's like, I was thinking, like, it's not that I'm running out of time with this by any means.
No, but it was like, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like my adolescence is like not there anymore.
Clock's
it's like,
ticking. Yeah, you want to do something, especially before you're like 30, and
yeah,
enjoy your 20s.
Yeah, so it's
I
like
enjoyed the hell out of it
exactly,
as a musician.
Exactly. I'm like, I want to get out there and play some more.
Yeah.
So I started recording, and or not recording. I started writing all these little things, but the thing is, I couldn't figure out where I was going to fit in a band.
Right.
Because most of the bands that are here, it's a very competitive city. Like, as far as, not competitive city,
yeah, it's
but,
like a very close-knit
yeah.
thing, and it's like little groups of
it's,
musicians.
It's clicky
and, yeah.
sometimes. It's very clicky, especially coming from an outsider perspective.
Right.
And like, I seem super critical saying that about Bowling
Green. No,
I
get that.
But I'm not from here, so I get here. And
I'm born and raised, and I've been in the scene since like the late 80s.
Yeah.
I totally...
Dude, it's...
I've seen it go through a lot of things, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like everybody I talk to... I was like, do you know anybody who has a band or anybody? I was like, I actually was a professional bassist,
right.
Like, and I was making most of my money off that. Like,
that's crazy.
And they'd be like, no, oh, man, you know, like, I don't know.
You clickish.
Know? Yeah, and they just give me like the cold shoulder, and I'm like, I'm not bad. That was my whole thing. So I asked one of, because after like the fallout of Rose Tent Collective and everything, I just didn't really like talk to anybody. I didn't really, it wasn't like I was mad at anybody.
Right.
I just didn't really,
it's just the way it happened.
Yeah. It's like, I just didn't really talk to anybody. And I texted the drummer, who was like the only person that I really talked to. And I was like, hey man, like, I'm in Bowling Green now. I was like, and I miss playing music. And he goes, I think I know like a couple people who might be playing a band or like making some music or something. And I go over, and he gives me this number for this one guy, and it was Mitchell Manuel, who's in my band right now.
Yeah.
And he goes, and the guy I'm talking about is John Watts. He plays in Frontier, that I think they were here like...
They were here this past weekend.
Yeah, they were here this last weekend.
They're from London, I believe.
I don't know. I know John's from Louisville, but
I think the band said that they were from London, Kentucky.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I know exactly who you're talking
about. Yeah, so I used to play with their drummer a lot, and actually we have a couple.
He was good.
Yeah, me and him are actually talking about a project that we're wanting to put together as well.
Cool.
So
so I'm assuming you saw them when they were at
I actually
park.
Didn't. No? I didn't know they were gonna be in. He didn't tell
That's
me.
Funny.
Yeah, he didn't tell me they were gonna be in. And then like Mitchell texts me, but Mitchell texts me, he goes, yeah, John's in. I go, are you freaking kidding me? Like, dude, I'm like, he's one of my better friends. Like, what's up? But
it's kind of weird.
Yeah, but yeah. So I go over and I play with Mitchell, and he's playing guitar, and he's like, we just start. He was like, what do you want to play? What do you want to play? And he was like trying to bring out like some Chris Stapleton stuff. And I'm like, how about this? I go, you lay down something and I'll lay down something and see how it flows together. Or you lay down a song, because John told me that he wrote. I was like, you lay down a song. And Mitchell starts pulling out all these really cool like chord progressions and stuff that are like, I really enjoy Mitchell's playing, and like this is going to be like a total bro crush moment because he's in my band, but it's like I
as
really
it should be.
Yeah, but it's like I really enjoy his playing because he's not very technical, but he's very intelligent with how he puts songs together.
Right.
And he links all these different things, and I start playing, and then
well, there's a science to that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. He's really good about that, though. Like, a lot of people have to work on it. I had to work on it forever because I grew up listening to punk music and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like I didn't know how to link this chord to this chord. So he spent a lot of time, and I think it's honestly because he listens to R&B more than rock.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like he plays in a rock band, but he doesn't listen to it. But anyway, we start playing, and we get done playing, and he goes, okay, that was really good. You know, like he told me, he's like, that was really good. I have a couple friends that I play with. Like, we practice out of a storage unit right now. And we're looking for maybe somebody to play with. He's like, but you're like basically trying to tell me that I was above it. I'm like, no, dude, like if I was like,
don't you love that?
Yeah, I was like, no, I'm not above it. Like, just let me talk to the guys. Right. And, like, so
at least test it out.
Yeah, you know, like, so I practiced with him a couple times and wrote a couple things, and then we'd take since the house that I live in here has a garage, and this was about a year ago that all this was going on.
Okay.
And
that's my next question.
Yeah, this was about a year ago when all that was going on, and I go, hey, you want to come over because I got a garage, like, and just actually practice, like, right. Full band. And we get
storage unit practices are difficult.
Yeah, they don't have power. They don't have any power. So it was like,
that's crazy.
Excuse me. But it was, what am I looking for? It was really just different. Like, that's the thing is I'd played with bands where we did, our own renditions of different songs, or like we had these songs that were very classic rocky, and they had that, like, that, you know, Skinner Daddy feel to it, and
that
vibe. Yeah, and that's how a lot of Roco stuff was. So I'd started practicing with Young Romantics, and it was this thing.
So was that already established, or?
So okay. I probably need to talk about them a little bit more. My bad.
I'm just curious if that was something you walked into, or if this is how it formed.
Okay, so Young Romantics was a project between Griffin Fletcher and Matt Porter.
Okay.
Yeah. And they started as an acoustic duo. So mainly it was covers, but the thing is I noticed that they didn't really have that much independent material yet. They had a couple songs, and they had an EP up on SoundCloud or something.
Right.
But what I really enjoyed about Matt and Griffin at the time was they were these kids with the EP up on SoundCloud, but they were getting booked for gigs. And I was like, just coming from like over in the eastern part of the state, like, you just never heard of that. Like,
yeah.
They played like a couple bars in Cincy just as like an acoustic duo.
Right.
And like Matt plays ukulele on some of their songs and stuff. And I was just sitting there. I was like, how the hell are these kids getting booked everywhere? You know? And I'm 3 years older than everybody in the band.
Okay.
So like I was honestly just confused.
They had the connections.
Yeah.
The
I was like, do y'all have connections or whatever? And I get to playing with them, and they're like, well, we honestly just kind of like send out emails, and sometimes we get responses and sometimes we don't. So it's like, I'm like, well,
it's
hell.
It's like gambling, but there's no money.
Yeah. It's like, well, hell, I'll play with you all. Like, if it's that low risk, you know, like, so we started that, and I mean, we put together some really good songs really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we put together a few good songs really quickly, and I give our band a lot of crap because I call it butt rock sometimes, because a lot of our songs, like, they end up coming out like sounding three doors down-ish or something like that. And I pick at it, though. Like, it's it's good music.
Some people
Yeah, it's like, it's good music. I just pick at it. I think it's really funny. And, yeah, like, I think I even promoted, like, one of our shows. We had a show at Tidballs a couple weeks ago. And I promoted the show on Instagram or something. I was like, the best butt rock band in Bowling Green. So... They weren't too happy with me about that one, but the show came together.
Yeah,
but.
you got involved in that, and it came together pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's been with what, the last year?
Last year, yeah. That's what I'm so impressed about it, because I came in with my experience, and they're like, hey, can you help us get to this level? I go, you're going to freaking hate me.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a dick about a lot of stuff.
But it's going to happen.
I'm going to make you good. Like, I'm not worried about that.
Right.
So, I got everybody together, and, like, they really impressed me with how much they were willing to work on stuff, and, like, Griffin's a fantastic lyrical writer.
Now, go through the, who is in the Young Romantics.
Okay, Young Romantics is Mitchell Manuel on guitar and vocals.
Right.
Griffin Fletcher, vocals. Matt Porter, drums. And me, I do some vocals, I do guitar on recordings, and I do bass.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And you guys just have, is it one release?
We have two singles out right now.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, we have two singles out right now.
So you haven't put out like a full record or an EP or anything?
We have an EP coming out, though. Okay. I think that's coming out on August 30th this year.
Perfect.
Yeah,
This should air perfectly.
Yeah, that's coming out August 30th, and our show is actually that week, because school starts back that week. And most of our fan base, where they're younger, are college
students.
They're
coming back.
So it's like, we're just going to have a back-to-school party.
You know? Fan base is back.
Yeah.
We got an EP coming out.
Dude, I made a joke about that the other day. I was like, because we hadn't played a show in so long, because I mean, Griffin, where he's into like journalism and reporting, he's got an internship in St. Louis this summer. So it's like,
well, at least he's close.
Oh yeah, he's close. So like, he came in for the show, and we got ready to play. I was like, we're getting the band back together, you know, like
gotta love that.
Yeah, but so yeah, we got those coming out here pretty soon. But yeah, I mean,
did you guys do local recording or?
Oh yeah. So I got to give a big shout out to Max Erskine.
Yes,
I love that man.
I don't know him.
You need to have
his work.
You need to have him on here, because
he's really good.
He's honestly like one of the best producers I've worked with.
Because I've heard that from a lot of people.
I hated working in Nashville. Yeah, like anytime
I
you
do too. I hate it.
I hate working in Nashville because people.
I did
down
that
there,
like. Decades before you did, but it hasn't changed.
No, you know? Like it's every single time.
Probably
I go
worse
down there,
now than it was when I was down there.
Every single time I go down there, it's like, well, but are you from Nashville? You know, like get the hell out of here.
Who is?
Yeah, I'm like, who's actually from there? Like, if you say you're from Nashville, you've probably
if
just
you say
worked.
You're from Nashville, you're from Murfreesboro or Gallatin.
Yeah, it's like it you is. Probably work for a record company too. A lot of people don't even, they're like from Los Angeles or New York,
it's
and then
true.
They start wearing cowboy boots and say they're from fucking Nashville.
That's pretty much in a nutshell what it boils down to. But yeah, that's cool. I've heard a lot of good things about Max, not only as a human being, but as a music producer, recording engineer, whatever you want to call it.
He's so good because he wants you to do what you want to do.
Right.
You know, like he's not trying to get his own spin on
anything.
No,
he's capturing you.
Yeah.
And he's finding the right mics and the right settings to get what's best for you, not telling you, well, you can do that on stage, but you're going to do it this way here.
Yeah, it's like whenever I was recording with him, like my voice, when I sing a lot of times, ends up being a little bit raspy.
Mm-hmm.
So he throws a high gain mic on it, you know, like that kind of thing.
And right.
I had with our second release, Savior, that just came out a few weeks ago, the bass part in it, I really wanted to make my bass sound like one of the Sawtooth synthesizers.
You know?
So I took a Big Muff, turned it all the way up. We had to put the amplifier outside.
Nice.
Because it was feeding back so much. And like he did all this crazy stuff just for me to get like one song done. Yeah. You know, like, because
that's what it takes.
I know, because I was just like, dude, I know this is going to be a pain in the ass, yep. but I was like, I want it to sound like this.
I mean, that's the art part of it.
Yeah, that's the fun
art
part.
Creative part. And that, I mean, it drives some people crazy, or they just think that things can't be done certain ways. Yeah. No, you can do whatever you want. You just have to have the right person to kind of guide that into happening.
Yeah, and that's why I'm definitely using him here in the next little bit. I'm probably going to schedule my solo project here to, well, not solo, it's a new band. I have a lot of songs
right.
that are not in the same style as the
right,
Young
but
Romantics.
Just something else.
Yeah, me. Yeah. And I,
you're very active.
Yeah.
As a writer and musically, just you got a lot inside.
Yeah.
You want to get it out.
Yeah, I do. And I think there's a lot that I still have left to say. So.
Makes up for all the stuff you may have written a long time ago and never did anything with.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the problem, because before I was working with people who are very, very good.
Right.
The problem with working with people who are very, very good is if you are also very, very good, mm-hmm. or you're just good.
Right.
Your stuff is just lost, you know? Like, it's just not there. So I'm like at the point where I'm kind of just aggravated. I'm like, I want to do my own thing.
Well, I encourage you to do it.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I did the same thing recently. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a nice breath of fresh air.
Yeah, yeah. And
to discover your inner soul of music, so to speak.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm doing everything except for drums, because yeah. I can play drums, just not well. So I was like, well, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to get somebody who's good, and I'm excited for that. I'm trying to figure out a name for it right now. So if anybody has any names, and
leave it in the comments.
Yeah, yeah, leave it in the comments, because right now
in the comments below.
It's like I was texting my friend earlier today, and I have like the Beaks and the Belts as like two like different band names. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, either one.
I like
know.
It.
Okay, I don't know.
Put them both together.
Yeah, put the Beaks and the Belts.
So, when did Young Romantics, like, officially kick off? Like, I know you said a year, but it's literally been a year?
It's not even been that long.
Really?
Dude, we started playing a few shows. We played a gig at the A-Frame
okay.
where we did pretty decent.
Right.
And we had four people there. And then
we've all had those shows.
No, it was so funny though, because this is how quickly like it's kind of taking off, like that we don't really know what to do with it.
Right.
Because we played that show with four people. We go in the studio to record for a couple months and get everything together. And we come back and play the A-Frame a couple months later. We had 90 to 100 people there. Like, and after we got finished playing, everybody left. So we,
isn't that crazy?
Yeah, we were like, what the hell just happened? Because we had this sick band, I think it was Lady Couch from Nashville or something.
Oh, wow.
And they're so good, and they played after us, and everybody got up and left.
That's
and I was like, man, that sucks.
I think the biggest problem with our town is shows are too late.
Yeah, right?
Like too when late. You go to Nashville, a venue is open until 2 in the morning, but the bands play from 8 to midnight.
Dude, yeah, and that's the thing.
So like, around here, the headliner goes on at midnight or whatever. You
yeah.
know, it's like, it's just too late.
Yeah, I felt super bad with our show at Tidballs. We had a pretty good turnout, especially for none of our fan base being here. We still had about like 15 to 20 people show up at Tidballs, yeah. and that wasn't bad.
No.
But it's like the thing was, is like we just got started so late, and I was like,
again, you're a new band.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. You
yeah.
know, you building that fan base kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't matter if school's in or not.
Right, right.
I get so bent out of shape about, well, there wasn't a crowd because school's out. Really? this is the third largest city in the state. You're going to tell me it's because Western's out that nobody's there?
Yeah.
Bowling Green isn't filled with music fans, just the college kids.
Oh, my
you.
God.
So that, yeah. that bugs me a little bit.
Yeah. It was funny, though. Like, I'm trying to build up a fan base among, like, the local crowd. It's just kind of, it's different.
It takes time.
And especially since I'm not from here. Like,
right.
I've only been here a year and a half, two
right.
years. I don't
And
know.
Again, I think that plays a pretty good role in all of it, but
yeah,
you're obviously on the right path.
Yeah, it's like I don't.
And now you're on the Sound Atlas,
right?
So you're like cemented into the Bowling Green music.
Yeah, because I was like six beers deep the other night, and I saw it roll across, and I was like, oh, this guy
looks
cool.
Yeah. Well, it's just, this was built for the purpose of capturing people's stories.
Yeah.
But it's based on local music. It's based on Bowling Green local music, which we associate as South Central Kentucky.
Yeah.
Being from Somerset, yeah, you definitely fit into that category.
Yeah.
I've interviewed several people from Somerset, Russell Springs, and Glasgow. I kind of pull all that in.
Was it Gravel? Like they had
Gravel
a Switches Gravel
from
Switches
out there.
Here?
And I interviewed Allie from No Deceit, which they're from Campbellsville.
Yeah, I think I've heard of them.
So
before.
To me, I look at that area as not only deep and rich in music, but they all come here.
Right?
And you are one of many that
prove
like, that point.
And
you know?
I highly recommend to anybody in Bowling Green, like Somerset's got a few different venues and things open now.
I know, and I've never played there, but I'm looking to
I went to Jarfly. It's a little brewery downtown.
I've got a lot of friends that have played there.
Dude, I went and there was this cat, I didn't catch his name, but he was just had an acoustic electric plugged into a little Fishman. I swear to God, he sounded like Blaze Foley. I was sitting there, that's folk music, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like one of these little things, like a microcosm of like this deep, rich culture. And I talked to this one guy that was there at the bar, like taking pictures, and he used to work with the record industry, and he like worked with Jerry Garcia back in the day and
that's
stuff.
Wild.
Yeah. And it's in Somerset. I'm like, yo, dude, this is crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of rich history in music that has come from that area, which I guess would be the central Kentucky location.
Yeah.
But and from being from here, we look at it as eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, it's like...
Because you're going east.
Yeah. I mean, there are elements of Appalachia that's in Somerset.
Right.
Especially my dad's family coming from Magoffin County. I don't really see it that way.
I've seen so many bands or musicians come from that area to play here or just passing through here to play... Not only Bowling Green, but maybe Louisville, Nashville, and you know we're in a nice little hub here of things around this town alone.
And I like Bowling Green's music scene a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, just like any music scene, there's flaws, but that's just mainly like that's just music. That's music people, man.
I'm one of the flaws. So being that you've been here for a little bit, and you're not only out and about, but you're also involved in it now with the band getting out and playing stuff, like you've said. Who are you a fan of around here, and what do you go out to see?
That's a tough question because...
That's why I like to save it for the end.
Yeah, man. Like, that's a tough one. I've been out to a few Riff shows, and I like them a lot. Like, they're really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love Kai's energy when he's playing because not a lot of people play guitar like that. You know?
No.
Like, they don't, and that's one of those things, like... I really dig like just super energy driven stuff, and that's an awesome one. I've been trying to catch Dan Luke and the Raid out a few times.
I know.
But
they played last night and I missed it.
Yeah, it's like every single time I go out and I'm like, I thought Dan Luke was playing. They're like, no, they played yesterday. So like, Dan Luke, if you're out there, I want to see you.
I ran into him last weekend and we talked for a minute, but it was just, that's how the musicians seem to happen around this town.
Yeah, it's
we all just kind of say hi to each other in passing.
Yeah.
And I don't really catch every show or every band that plays, but they're good.
Yeah.
They're really good. That new, as we're taping this, they just released a single this past week.
Yeah.
Off of the upcoming record.
Yeah.
The video that was shot.
That's awesome.
In Franklin, and there's a big tribute to Dylan in it.
Yeah.
And awesome.
That's awesome.
Man. I'm so proud to see not only what they've gone through, but the fact that they've handled it so well.
Yeah.
And not giving up and quitting.
Yeah.
You know, that was
right?
A big thing.
Yeah.
So that's a really nice thing.
There's a lot of courage that's said with that, too. Like, a lot of times if something like that happens,
that's tough.
Yeah, it's so hard.
So
man.
I really applaud them for what they've done. But they're you know, brilliant band.
Yeah,
you know, and they're going to continue on. Mm-hmm. And obviously, in memory of Dylan, I think that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
So who else are you a fan of? Anybody else come to mind?
I've seen Fat Box a couple times. Mm-hmm. I've always, like, where I played in a jam band, I've always wanted to shoot my name out and be like, hey, I'll play.
Yeah.
Part of the, like, I'd love to guest star on any sets. If there's a jam band out there, I'll play with them.
Yeah, they're definitely the premier jam band, I think, of our scene.
I love it. But that's the thing.
Like, I know there's others, but they seem to be the...
Well, it's where I'm not from here. It's like I don't have a resume in Bowling Green yet with everybody.
But so you're working on it.
Yeah, I am. It's like I want to be able to pop in with different bands or like do guest stuff or anything mm-hmm. else. But it's like I'm not even expecting to get paid. I just like playing with different people.
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, you know, because it's like if you just randomly pop in and play a set with somebody, you learn more about them than if you had a 4-hour conversation.
Right. Exactly. Like, because it's a language of its own.
Yeah, like more of your feeling comes out with that. Like,
yeah.
A lot of times people just look at me like this energetic, like, all over the place guy. And it's like, no, it's like, actually, like, you see me play, like, it's a very deeply emotional thing for me. It's like, that's weird. So, yeah.
Well, is there anything I've missed? Is there anything I've forgotten?
Dude,
do you want to plug the band and the upcoming future events that the band has going on?
Yeah, sure. So Young Romantics, I think our EP is going under In Case You Feel the Same, and that's coming out August 30th.
Perfect time.
And we also have a show at the A-Frame on August 30th.
That's great.
Which we're trying to pull a local band into. I'm not sure what the details on that are, mm-hmm. but it'll be a party. Like,
excellent.
I got a lot of people coming already. So
fantastic.
That's going to be fun. I want to have more fun than I want to play, honestly.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference in what our scene's going through now is it's really starting to, instead of being so cutthroat like it was in the 80s and 90s, it's so open now. Everybody mm-hmm. seems to... Musically, it's night and day in their bands, but yet they like, hey, we should do a show together.
Yeah,
it's fun. I think some of the best shows I've ever seen were two bands that had no business being on stage together.
No, it's so much fun.
So that's what's cool about our music scene right now is I'm seeing a lot more shows of diversity,
mm-hmm.
and it works because it's music.
Yeah,
and it's good music.
It is good
music, and the crowds have fun, and it's not about some sort of battle of who's better. Yeah. All that crap, you know. But you guys got a lot coming up for 2019, and the future's looking pretty bright.
Do you think
you're going to stay in Bowling Green?
I have no idea, because I'm getting ready to graduate in December, and it's like...
You got to stay close, right?
Right, that's the thing. It's like, because I'm just
If the band takes off and does pretty good, you can't abandon ship.
Exactly, that's the thing. It's like, I can't abandon ship, and like I'm also working on my own stuff, too. So it's like, I don't... Whatever takes off, I'm going to have to be there in one way or another because I'll lose my mind if I'm not playing.
Look at what you've established in such a short amount of time just coming to this beautiful town. Well, is there anything I've missed? Anything you wanted to talk about that I idiotically forgot to ask?
No, I think that everything was pretty much covered, man. Like,
good.
Yeah.
Real quick before we do wrap it up.
Yo.
You are the bass player of Young Romantics.
Yes, sir.
What do you play and what's your rig consist of?
Oh, dude. Okay, so I've switched it up a little bit in the last little bit, but I have one American professional jazz bass.
That's all you got?
That's my bass.
No backup?
I have my...
No string break go-to backup?
No, I carry extra strings with me like in my pocket there when I play. Like, I will never play another bass on stage. No.
That's cool.
And I took the pick guard off of it Jocko style.
So you just have the plate on the knobs?
Yeah, I just have the knobs. I actually removed my middle knob. I ran the bridge and neck pickup in series.
Sweet.
And just have one big old knob there, and I took the middle one off.
That's cool.
And I play a Fender Rumble 200, but I run that into I think it's a 1995 Ampeg 2x10.
Perfect.
So I have a 1x15 and a 2x10.
Well, you're a new band to me.
Yeah.
I didn't know any... I've heard the name, but I didn't know you. Obviously, like you said, you're new to this area.
Yeah, I'm just a random guy.
Not many people know you.
Yeah.
But here I am, lifelong guy. Been involved in the music scene for a long time, so... Yeah. I was like, who is this guy messaging me? So I immediately look into the name, and I found a video. And it was like, why have we not seen this band more.
Was it the one from A-Frame where everybody was losing their shit?
It was insane.
Yeah.
And you, I mean, the band's great. The song was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just went into this bass thing.
Yeah.
Like, took the song on another path. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
This dude's good.
Dude, I've been playing, like I said, since I was 12.
Like, you're serious about, like,
yeah.
You really took it in another direction.
Yeah, and that was, like, 100% planned, because I remember we had that entire song written.
Yeah.
And, well, they had, like, half of it written, and then I listened to it, and I go, okay, what we need to do is, because it was a very, like, soft song in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
I go, what we need to do, walk it down and do a 4-chord thing, all the way out and just shred people's faces off the entire time. And that's what happened. And it did. And,
and it worked.
Like, and I was like, okay, I didn't really have, because somewhere along the line, like the Rumble has like an onboard like overdrive. Well, I lost that. So I don't know where the little pedal to do it. And I don't have time to like turn around in the show and like press the button. So I found a cheap ass Behringer pedal that Mitchell had laying around. And I go, hey, I'll throw this on my rig. So I've been using that. Just as that, and like I don't use a big muff or anything on stage. It's
right.
Just a little Behringer pedal.
That's
and
cool.
I use it's like a 1980s Dan Electro Cool Cat, like for a guitar.
Yeah,
I use that for my bass on a couple songs.
Very
too.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's cool, man.
Yeah, I like I said, I view it as a guitar. It's not a
bass guitar.
Yeah, it's not a bass to me. It's like I'll hit chords and everything else.
Oh yeah, no, I noticed that in the video. It was really good. But Young Romantics is available.
Oh, available on everything.
Yeah,
yeah, everything.
The typical standard stuff.
Yeah, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and then I think there's a couple other ones that I don't even know what they are.
Okay.
So we got
a lot out there.
Yeah, it's like we got the package that it's on there. I don't think it's on Tidal, but if it's on Tidal, like, why am I not getting paid right now? So.
But things are obviously going pretty good,
yeah.
And you guys are on a roll, and I hope that this Sound Atlas episode helps bring more attention to the band for you guys.
We've managed to make it through our first EP without totally killing each other.
That was the goal, right?
There were a lot of things thrown and said, but nobody killed each other yet. So
nobody quit.
Nobody quit. Everybody just yelled at each other. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Garrick, thank you very much. And Young Romantics, the hot new Bowling Green band. Everybody go check them out. And thank you for doing this.
No problem, man.